This is Community Voices on NPR Illinois 91.9 UIS.
The latest from NPR News is coming up in 20 minutes at the top of the hour. You can read about past Community Voices segments and listen on demand to most of them at nprillinois.org. To conclude today's Community Voices, Graham Peck discusses how the UIS Center for Lincoln Studies fits into the Lincoln ecosystem here in the Capitol.
How does the center fit with the other Lincoln assets in the Springfield area?
I think that's going to get worked out. That's probably even less worked out because creating the center was the product of years. There's a faculty senate resolution on the kind of the tasks of the center. Whereas I don't think there's any specific document saying this is how we'll work with all these other Lincoln entities. But it goes without saying it would be a travesty if somehow we fail to work with them effectively. I think we're all committed to doing that. They have resources that we can use. For instance, just an obvious example, if I've got a bunch of high school teachers, I want to take them to historical sites when they're here in Springfield. It doesn't make any sense not to do that. Half a day of teaching, half a day of visiting sites. If it may be a 4 or 5 day program, we've got enough sites that every afternoon you go visit a site. And that changes the learning. It's more dynamic. It's more hands-on. You get your eyes and your ears involved, and that changes your both recollection and your understanding and your ability to convey it yourself subsequently. I think that we could sort of take that example and multiply it into every aspect of the study of Lincoln. The same would be true for scholarship. It wouldn't make sense to bring graduate students here and then say, oh, you know, don't go to the Lincoln Library to do research. Well, of course, we're going to want them at the Lincoln Library because it's the premier place in the country aside from the Library of Congress to do research on Lincoln. We will be successful in working with them. I would really like us to contribute as much as possible to tourism to Springfield. That's probably a longer term initiative, and I don't underestimate the challenges because there's a lot of parties involved in that, not just governmental bodies, but businesses as well. That should seriously be considered. I'm sure it's been on the checklist for a lot of people for a long time. I remember because I came down here doing my graduate work in the 1990s. I stayed here for 6 months. Then there was discussion of a colonial Williamsburg kind of experience, but that's hard to do. You know, it takes a lot of concerted resources, but there might be some interesting possibilities that can be explored short of that, but that still create events that attract people to come, particularly from St. Louis and Chicago. They're really within striking distance if we can put on something that's interesting. And
what can we take from Lincoln's time that applies to today? That what feels like it's parallel to Lincoln's time today?
One of the most critical needs that we have right now are unification of the nation. That's the one thing that really aligned Washington and Lincoln together. There's a great book on Washington by Don Higginbotham called Uniting a Nation. It's actually a very accessible short book, perfect for the public. But he was a great Washington scholar, and this distilled his central understanding in something like 100 pages, 150 pages, I forget exactly. What he argued was that Washington's life as a revolutionary commander, as the leader of the Constitutional Convention, even though he mostly kept his mouth shut there, but he symbolically represented this new constitution, which was of enormous import. Then as the first president did in all three of those eras of his life, he focused symbolically and institutionally on uniting the nation. A lot of historians think that his role was absolutely essential because the Americans were coming out of a colonial experience where kings were the head of the nation. They were the ones tasked with creating order. The order flowed from them hierarchically down in an unequal society. It was not an egalitarian society. The divine right of kings meant that God established the kingship and order would flow through the kingship, just like order flowed through God. What are you going to do to replace that once Thomas Paine takes on the idea of kingship and ridicules it in Common Sense and those ideas take root? Washington sort of has this very paradoxical position as this symbolic representation of monarchy while he's carrying the country into republicanism, which is a form of government without monarchy. Higginbotham's book is phenomenal in showing that. Lincoln, of course, is in this very curious position where, also paradoxical, he tears the country apart in a sense, the anti-Lincoln crowd blames him for the destruction of the nation. I, of course, am not a part of that crowd. But the fact is that the Republican Party's anti-slavery program does precipitate Southern secession, because the Southerners recognize correctly that there is a major change afoot in the structure of the government and what that's going to mean for their property rights long term. They abandon ship. The country is ripped apart in the most savage way possible. Lincoln then has to figure out, well, first, how to win. That's the first part of unity, is not losing. And the second part of unity then is reconstructing the country. Didn't really get the opportunity to do that as he desired. It didn't work out as well as perhaps he would have hoped. It was probably more his fears than his hopes. Of course, we've always wondered ever since, as historians and as a people, could it have been better had he been guiding the ship instead of Andrew Johnson? We can't know. It would have been a hard run for anybody, including Lincoln. I don't think the massive wounds of the war and the deep racial prejudices that were obviously national, but I think were even more intensive in the South, it would have been hard for anyone to negotiate those without peril and challenge. But that at least was, in a sense, the Reconstruction challenge. And we see now how difficult those kind of challenges are, because we've got a country not nearly as divided as the country was then. It's not even remotely close. We haven't had an equivalent of 4 million Americans died in combat. Even what we have had has been deeply divisive. It has a lot of people questioning, what does our nation stand for? And how do we put Humpty Dumpty back together again? That story remains to be told.
The real challenge for all the leadership that's in DC, regardless of party, it is going to be something that we continue to cover and that I'm sure you'll continue to study and look at. In these times of COVID, you're getting by okay besides being isolated?
I really am getting antsy. I remember when a bunch of people said a few months in, they were super antsy. There was people who were upset. Psychologists were being consulted in the news about how to handle this. And I wasn't so much then, to be honest with you. I'm not saying I thought things were normal. My routine was very thrown off. It took me a while to function normally in terms of my work. No, it wasn't like I was in psychological distress. More recently, I'm not distressed, but I have been antsy. I desperately want to see some friends of mine. I was thinking about this morning. I want to go to Boston and see my best friend, and it's killing me. And I'm not seeing anybody. So I really am eager to get a vaccine and to start moving around. And I want the university to open, and I want the city to open up. Let's put our prayers that keeps moving forward. We've got a window that's shortening quickly. Let's hope for that. And let's hope people want to take the vaccine, which ironically may be our biggest challenge now. I think by the time the summer comes, we'll have enough vaccines, but we'll want people to put them in their arms.
Graham, you had some other work you've been working on lately. Can you tell us about it?
This past summer, despite COVID, I contacted my very good friend in Chicago and former colleague and art professor named Nathan Peck. And we decided to do this crazy thing, which was to make a Lincoln Douglas reenactment COVID tour of the state in the middle of the summer of 2020. It was a week of production. We lined up 5 reenactors and we drove to 4 of the Lincoln Douglas debate sites in the northern half of the state. We were going to finish in Alton, but we actually stopped in Quincy because of the controversy over Douglas's statue. This was a film on the Lincoln Douglas debates and the reenactors and how they kind of presented the debates and interpreted the debates to the people who watched them. But then we had this amazing thing happen in the middle of the production, which was the Speaker of the House says, got to be thinking about taking down Douglas's statue. So we shifted gears in the middle of that week. We returned to Springfield. We ended up interviewing Catherine Harris, who I'm sure you know well, very distinguished member of the community here in Springfield and very knowledgeable about history and a reenactor herself. And we were actually planning on doing a reenactment of her as well, weirdly enough, in Springfield. But we did end up interviewing her on Zoom, and we did an in-person interview with Sunshine Clemens, who is the co-founder of Black Lives Matter here in Springfield. Our road trip film, we were driving around the state, took a very interesting turn as we were contemplating how to think about these historical figures and the meaning of historical monuments in the middle of the summer of 2020, which was ravaged by COVID and all of the disputes over historical memory and racial equality in our society. That film should be having some kind of premiere this spring, and hopefully we can have the premiere at the university. Either it would be a Zoom premiere, or perhaps if we wanted to wait, I guess we could have maybe have a real premiere for kind of a fun event that maybe could bring people together in person.
Please let us know when it released so we can tell people. What should happen to the monuments of people like Douglas or Lee? Do they go into a museum? Is that the solution, or?
Well, I think it depends on the monument. Obviously, there's a lot of monuments out there. So far, most Lincoln monuments have been untouched. That's not entirely true. They took down a replica of a famous one in Washington, D.C. that was in Boston, and that's been removed. I think they're going to relocate it somewhere else where they wish to interpret it differently. For the most part, the ones that have been more systematically removed have been the Confederate monuments, on the basis that the Confederates were committing treason, and we need to come to grips with that. And they are committing treason to maintain slavery. At the end of the day, that was their central rationale. To do that, they were repudiating the central doctrines of the American experiment, which was the equality of man. And they were very explicit about this. Those statues, I think, are coming under more severe scrutiny. Douglas, the statues of people like Douglas are kind of in this interesting middle ground, or George Rogers Clark, who, of course, fought for the Illinois country in the Revolutionary War, which had enormous consequences, in my judgment, at least for the Treaty of Paris in 1783 and the claims that American negotiators could make for the Western country. Folks like this are in this middle ground area where they weren't traitors, but they didn't say things that we like to hear nowadays. Their status is questionable. And of course, the interesting thing about the film is that Sunshine Clemens was the primary voice in requesting the removal of the Douglas statue, which was removed. The Democratic Party brought it down. There's an interesting debate there, which is precisely why the film ended up exploring this issue. And I think the film delved into the history of Douglas and Lincoln precisely to sort of shed light on how to think about these monuments. And I think one of the big stories of monuments is they are different from history. So you take down a monument, it doesn't mean that the history goes away. Historians can still access all the same records. They're still going to be writing books. And you're not burning books. You can still go learn about these figures. But the monument is sort of a public representation of a figure. And it was put up always. It's always put up in a certain moment for a certain reason by certain people. They all come down at some juncture. Well, some of them don't if they're maybe super famous. But like the Statue of Liberty, it's hard for that one to come down. Eventually, they either rot or because you have to pay to maintain them. A lot of them do eventually come down by hook or by crook, which is part of the story of what's going on right now. So it's not completely uncharacteristic for them to come down, but it is interesting the kind of debate that emerged in this moment and the scale of it and how many monuments we're talking about and how it related to divisions in our contemporary society.
What great timing. Congratulations on being able to seize on that to give us some perspective. We'll look forward to that movie. And again, Graham, thank you for joining us today.
All right, thank you.
Tomorrow, we'll listen to more presidential conversation as we drop in on the ribbon cutting for the UIS Center for Lincoln Studies and hear what a panel of local historical speakers see as the effect Lincoln has had here. Here's a sample from the remarks of Sagamon Experience Director of Engagement and Curator Ann Mosley on Lincoln and education.
Education was a huge focus for Abraham Lincoln. In his earlier biography, he ended up writing that if you added up his years of education, it would only add up to one. It is very, very important that we recognize Lincoln's love of education and why it draws us to him. What Lincoln made very interesting to me was not just him as an individual, but the people who came in contact with him, the individuals that he affected here in Illinois. You start to learn more about a person based off their actions and how people interpret them. For students, it's very important to see Lincoln as a real person who made mistakes and have had them laid out. But more importantly, that he learned from these mistakes as he moved forward and was able to persevere. I think that's what's drawing people to him today. We can still admire him while seeing the mistakes he made and how it made him better. The life and legacy of Lincoln has been shared by friends, family, and historians for generations. Scholars have sought out every manuscript, artifact, and histories passed down from those who knew him. Politicians have called on him for guidance, and people from all over the world regard him as a great individual. To this day, he is the second most written about individual in the world. And Lincoln remains a person to be studied. And yes, there is more to discover about Abraham Lincoln and about the people he surrounded himself with.
Segment Experience Director of Engagement and Curator Ann Mosley on how the UIS Center for Lincoln Studies will develop the story of Lincoln beyond his life to those who were around him at the time. Thanks to distinguished Professor Graham Peck and Dr. Sam Wheeler for providing the historian's perspective on Lincoln today. You can read about past Community Voices segments and listen on demand to most of them at nprillinois.org. Suggest a guest. Email communityvoices@nprillinois.org and we'll explore interviewing them. Community Voices airs weekdays at noon and Saturdays at 5 p.m. on NPR Illinois 91.9 UIS. For Bea Bonner, I'm Randy Evans. Community Voices is a production of NPR Illinois.